We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Dave Caban uses his running back breakaway score to evaluate the 2024 rookie running back class. Who are the most explosive players, and are there any fantasy stars? Let's check it out on RotoViz Radio.
What's up, RotoViz?
Welcome into the Fantasy Football Podcast here on RotoViz. I'm Curtis Patrick, joined by Dave Caban. We're talking rookie running back explosiveness in this episode. Dave hit with one of his deep research articles last week, actually his second in as many weeks, has been doing the in the weeds work. And we appreciate that because it's can be hard to avoid misses and even harder to find the right guys to draft in each tier. And rookie drafts, Dave's research helps us do that just a little bit better every single year. So we're going to go through his breakaway score metric tonight. It's going to remind you, what is the metric? Why did he come up with it? How has it been helpful? And then we're going to review this year's class versus some of the standouts from recent classes and see what takeaways we have. So Dave, why don't you take us through the metric?
Yes, sir. So the metric this year, I'm kind of rebranding a little bit differently here. For those of you that have followed along in years prior, I at one point called it breakaway rush score. However, last year we layered in receptions, and this year I formulated things a little bit differently. But one of the things that I had in my mind for a long time was you would read a prospect's profile, like a strictly like scouting profile, not based on analytics or anything like that. This was back when, I would read through a lot of the scouting reports that you might see on a player just to get a sense of what this guy was like, what things looked like when you watched him. And sometimes you would read about a player being, quote unquote, explosive. And then sometimes you would read about a player that got hurt at a point in his career. And, there might be a comment about how they lost their explosion, but occasionally I would say, well, I've watched this player play and it didn't look to me like they weren't explosive. So it started off by just going back, Curtis, and looking at play-by-play data to see how often some of these running backs were breaking runs of 15, 20, 25, 30, these big breakaway plays. Because at first I was just curious to see if these things that people were taking away from watching these players actually held up across their career, if this was an effect of us just seeing some of the same highlights over and over. What I found was very often in the best example of this, the first year that I did this, Royce Freeman, who never really panned out, but was a running back at Oregon, got hurt in the middle of his career. And I can remember reading articles and reports talking about how he seemed to have lost a step and lost some of that explosion. But the interesting thing was when you actually went back and you looked at the percentage of plays in which he was going over 20, 30, 40 yards, he actually got better post-injury, which then made me take a deeper look into this and try to see if there was a relationship between a player being an explosive running back in college rushing and that translating to him having a better chance of being successful in the NFL. And back when I started doing this maybe 5-6 years ago, what I did find that was interesting was if you look at running back metrics and how they correlate with fantasy scoring for players in the NFL, using some formulation of breakaway rushes actually proved to have a higher correlation than just about any other of the college stats that we would look at for a player. So we had something really useful here, because not only can it help us to understand if some of the commentary we're being given about players is accurate, but we can also use this as another data point to try to separate the players that look like they have good chances of being hits from those that do not have as good of chances. So for a while we were looking, oh, go ahead. Seems like you got something to interject with there quickly.
Yeah. What I wanted to say is, like, when you look at the top players from the first decade of you tracking this,
yep,
the top 30 players, there's really only maybe only two players in the top 30 overall scores from the top last decade that weren't fantasy relevant at some point.
Yep.
And so it's cool because this seems to stick regardless of level of competition. I mean, yeah, you got a lot of Power Five guys in, yep, here, but you have some G5 guys, and you have even some, you know, guys that are, you know, really are not even Division One players.
Yep.
Or on like the borderline, small, tiny little programs like Youngstown State, for example. So, I mean, I'll give you an idea of some of the names that are in this top 30. And the further down into it that I get into this list, you're going to see why Dave's approach here is probably valuable, because if you apply it to this year's class, you can get some similar scores from this year's class, even if it's not a player that was, like, you know, circled with hearts, you know, next to his name on your own draft board. You might want to rethink it, because this has been pretty good for finding guys that are going to be in your starting lineup at some point,
yep,
from a fantasy perspective. So this is going to go really fast. But I'm going to go down the list. Melvin Gordon. No, this is from 1 to 30.
Yep.
Melvin Gordon, Tevin Coleman, Duke Johnson, Kenneth Gainwell, Amir Abdullah, Jonathan Taylor, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Jay Ajayi, Buck Allen, Jaleel McLaughlin, Aaron Jones, Kareem Hunt, Ezekiel Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, Kenneth Dixon, Joe Mixon, Leonard Fournette, DeAndre Washington, Devin Singletary, Royce Freeman, Rashad White, Samaje Perine, Travis Etienne, Cameron Artis Payne, Breece Hall, Antonio Gibson, Darwin Thompson, and Paul Perkins. Now, there's different levels of quality there, but when you adjust for, like, what you had to pay for some of these guys, many of them were like street free agents from a dynasty perspective. Like, I mean, Kenneth Dixon was a preseason all-star, got injured a bunch of times. Darwin Thompson was a preseason all-star. Paul Perkins didn't really pan out. Injury was somewhat to blame, but you got, like, Cameron Artis Payne, not on anyone's radar, ended up having some RB1 weeks with the Rams. DeAndre Washington, one of the best kick returners of the past decade, and, you know, also had some utility out of the backfield. Almost every single other person on this list has been a legitimate fantasy producer, and some of the biggest stars from the last decade find themselves on this list too. So, you know, hopefully just going through that, it gives you an idea of, you know, well, hey, I got a name on Dave's list in the third round of my rookie draft or fourth round of my rookie draft. This is a great way to spend this dart throw.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we're seeing here, and when I first started doing this, this is the other interesting thing about it. I did different formulations of which buckets you would look at for long rushes. Then last year I started layering in receptions, and this year I tried putting things together in all kinds of different ways, doing a lot of different, you know, statistical methods that you would use. Basically, what I was finding was this continues to be a very solid way of looking for a single metric that you could look at. And I actually this year just determined that I could take breakaway receptions, breakaway rushes, do a couple of things, but really incorporate all of those to just make it now a very simple process, scale it 100 down to zero, with 100 being the highest score that we've seen. You set it at, you kind of standardize things. Now we're crediting players too that were breakaway reception artists, if you will, because with PPR being the most popular format now, and there definitely being some correlation between being able to do work there and being successful in the NFL, we have this really useful metric. The final thing that I'll say here is I think what's happening, Curtis, here is that there are very few things you can do with running backs to try to separate that player and his specific talent from the offensive scheme or the team that he's on. But when you start to look at these long runs, there's a level of, okay, maybe you got some good blocks, you get out 10 yards, you still have to do things to get past some of the, you know, secondary players in the defense. And there's certainly a level of skill to that, it would seem, as you mentioned. You know, a lot of these guys that we see here on this list too, when they did get in on special teams, were very good, you know, in that regard, or they're guys that we did see doing impressive things at the NFL level. So what we're really looking at here now is, I don't think I need to break it down anymore. Just know that there's a little bit of math that has gone into this to make it all work out. But we're looking at a metric that's incorporating a player's breakaway rushing and breakaway reception ability for running backs, and it tends to correlate pretty strongly in comparison to other metrics for running backs with NFL fantasy scoring. All right. I'll let you comment there before I move on.
Okay, so we know what the metric is. We know what the methodology is, and we know who some of the high performers have been in the past. So let's get into some of the high performers this year. Maybe what I think an interesting way to get into this, rather than picking some of the absolute tippy top names, because yep, the top names on the list are guys who aren't going to command as much rookie draft capital. I think they're more in that sleeper category. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the guys that are figuring into that kind of top three running back conversation and figure out how they compare to that top 30 list that we went through. And then we'll identify a few dart throws. So I think people are going to want to hear first and foremost about Trey Benson. He's got a lot of the momentum, seems to be a popular, trendy RB1 pick in the class now, especially with the questions about, you know, how early in the season might Jonathan Brooks be ready to go.
Yeah.
So talk to us about Benson's profile and how it stacks up against that top 30 we ran down.
Yeah, sure. So the first thing that I'll say about Benson is, if you looked at his breakdown between his ability as a rusher and as a receiver, he does actually score in a fairly balanced fashion. In terms of this rookie class, lands in the top half of it, and in a historical sense comes in with a 59th percentile score. Now, one of the things too that I did mean to add in here is I do some things where I'm also incorporating the volume that the player had and normalizing things so that every player with their final number would theoretically have like the, it's done as if every player had the same amount of opportunity based upon the opportunity that they played per game. So I'm not just looking at raw numbers. That way it doesn't matter how many games a player has played. But Trey Benson, pretty involved in the offense at Florida State. So that helps him get to his 59th percentile. And kind of what I wrote about Benson in the article after this was, I don't think that this is something that materially changes the way that I view him or view his profile. I think that what I normally look for in these is if a player really outperformed, went maybe above the 75th percentile, or if it's a player that is one that's supposed to be able to rely on his explosion athleticism and he's scoring lower than where his draft projected draft capital would tell you that he should go based off of those traits. So it helps us look at some of these players on the ends of the spectrum. So this didn't really move the needle too much for me in either direction. As I looked at Trey Benson again, it was a 59th percentile score for him. Let's just see if you have any thoughts on that. I quickly did want to pull up his full profile though in the box score scout.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire.
Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
No, I think we can go. We can go ahead and do that. I think, you know, if you look at Benson being a 42 for his BAS, I don't know where that would place him overall, but the lowest guy in that top 30 was Perkins at 57. So, I mean, Benson being the RB1 in this class, you know, fine. And there's a lot of guys who have panned out for fantasy, you know, that weren't in that top 30. It's not like those are the only 30 backs of the past decade that we should care about. But in this particular metric, you know, for a guy like Benson that wasn't necessarily a home run hitter, when you look at his stats or the film, I mean, it's even if you adjust for, you know, that number of games, you extrapolate it out, I mean, there's nothing that really forgives it. So, I mean, his athletic measurements, they are what they are, but at the end of the day, he wasn't a chunk play creator.
Yep. And just one important thing just to make sure if everybody goes and checks out the article to keep in mind is when you look at the breakaway score, though it's scaled 100 to 0, it doesn't indicate the percentile. So like I said, you know, Benson got a 42, which is a 59th percentile. So you got to keep that in mind. But by doing it that way, you can see the delta between players and where they fall out. So for example, Curtis, in this class, Benson comes in with a 42. He's ahead of a player like Bucky Irving by a whole 15 points. 15 points in breakaway rush score, which probably brings us to another player that we were going to be talking about at some point.
I mean, maybe. Like, I mean, we were.
His kind stock of has gone down, though, man. He's been fading.
He wasn't really not on my list of somebody that we needed. I mean, it's not surprising that his score is low. I mean, the receiving skill set there is still something that maybe we're interested in. But he looks like he's trending towards being like an Eno Benjamin type with not a lot of draft capital.
All right. Well, let me tell you something. Bucky Irving, right? You mentioned the receiving work. If we look at receptions normalized for more than that went for more than 10 yards, he scores towards the bottom of this class in that metric as well. So for a player where that's supposed to be part of his profile, I'd really like to see him perform stronger.
Well, right. I mean, I think that's just kind of what it comes down to across the board with him. Let's talk about Jonathan Brooks. I mean, I mentioned him, you know, he's going to be coming off the injury, but assuming that he gets back to full health, and I mean, so many of these guys that have ACLs do end up getting there at this point. That seems to be the norm as long as they're, you know, it's not a total knee devastation situation, which doesn't seem to be the case for him. Where did he stack up? Was he within sniffing distance of that top 30 list?
Yeah, so he finished with a 67th percentile score coming in with what equates to a 47. So 10 points behind Paul Perkins and Darvin Thompson, the last players in our top 30. But this is in the position where I start to consider it a pretty strong score, and it did make me take another look at Brooks. Now, as you mentioned with the injury, it might have been a little bit easier to overlook him back at the start of this draft cycle. But there are a lot of things to like about Brooks. And I think this does give me a little bit more interest in him. And it certainly opens this conversation about who should be the RB1 in the class. And if we get a little bit more specific on him and we look at his breakdown as a rusher and a receiver, it was pretty balanced. In fact, he is tied with Dylan Lobb out of UNH for the best scores beyond 30 plus yards on receptions. He also had one of the best scores too in very long rushes. So you're looking at a player that can do it as a receiver and as a rusher, and looks to be one of the more explosive players and the most explosive of the guys that we expect to get drafted in the early rounds in this class.
Let's hit two or three more of the bigger names, and then I want to talk about the two top overall scorers as potential sleepers, because the top, you know, you don't want to stay tuned here, because the top two overall scorers in this class would rate within that top 30 the last decade, and one of these guys would have a top 10 score from the past decade. So these are sleepers you want to stick around for. Let's talk about, I think a fun name on this list is somebody who started the athletic evaluation part of the draft cycle with a little bit of a disappointing performance in Indianapolis. And then he came back at his pro day and he kind of validated what you saw when you watched the player. And then also when you look at his box score, because it was not a guy that you thought, well, you know, where are the big plays? Like, he, when you think about him in context of the group of these prospects, he's a big play back.
Yeah.
And that's Audric Estime from Notre Dame. I mean, he's right there with Jonathan Brooks, just a point behind. How do their profiles differ? I mean, if I'm looking quickly at your matrix here, looks like a little bit more concentrated toward the rushing and a little bit less their upside in the receiving, at least what we saw from his normalized profile in college.
Yeah, sure. So Estime here was one of the players that when I finished this exercise really caught my eye. And to your point, Curtis, his rushing work comes out to be more impressive than what you see in his receiving work. But one of the interesting things is, though in totality he might have had fewer normalized breakaway receptions than other players, actually kind of towards the bottom half, or maybe bottom, you know, 75th mark, actually, though, had a pretty good job in the receptions that he did take for breakaways, taking those long distances. Now, the thing that I would point out here, though, that is really encouraging, this is a big-bodied guy, right? And if you look at normalized to 15-plus, he's right towards the top. So what I do often like here is when you drill in and some of the things that you're seeing about that people are excited in a player's profile, when we have things from college to support that. I really liked that. I think that of all the players I looked at, he was the one that I had to really go back and look at the most. The other thing that I talked about was he recorded 30 touchdowns between his sophomore and junior seasons. He's a younger back, looks explosive with that big body. And I think that this was an exercise that highlighted him as one of those players you probably need to go back and give a second look to if you haven't been that impressed by his profile already.
All right, another big name that seems to be a little bit more divisive from the national championship team up in that state up north. I will not say it as a Buckeye, but Blake Corum. Blake Corum, actually, within he's kind of just a middling dude within this class, and overall, this class doesn't necessarily have a lot of juice compared to some of the others that we've seen in the past decade. He really. I mean, again, there's offensive context, right? Yep. But I mean, there's a rate kind of baked into what we're doing here. Yep. And so as you extrapolate, you still don't get where you need to get. He really didn't show much from a receiving perspective. And we know that a big part of his profile was the touchdown scoring, and so many of them were short.
Yep.
I mean, Blake Corum scored a ton of touchdowns in college. And if you look at, the play-by-play log of those, I mean, an overwhelming percentage of those were from 1 yard out or 2 yards out. Yes. So I am interested to see, could he put up the chunk plays? If we're saying, hey, he's kind of a zero in the receiving department, at least from what we've seen so far, what does his rushing breakaway profile look like?
Honestly, it's middle of the road. It's nothing that I think would stand out, right? So if you look at something simple here, like normalized 15-plus, and you compare him with somebody like Jonathan Brooks, he's going to lag behind in that metric. Now, he did do okay in very long plays of 40 or more, but still is like middle of the road there. So if this is a player that does not have the receiving chops, and that certainly bears out when you look at his scores in that regard, and you have concerns that a lot of his collegiate production came from opportunities that are kind of gifted to him, you're not going to look at this profile and come away thinking, all right, this looks like a guy that can make his own opportunities. Now, I guess, you know, landing in the 42nd percentile, and I think if we removed the reception component, he might be up a little bit higher, and I have used formulations in the past. He's still not going to get up to the point, though, where it's going to make me raise some eyebrows, and I wouldn't say that this is low enough that it's going to make me really rethink his profile, but if we're looking for like an overall summarization on Blake Corum, I would say that this is probably disappointing, though, because he did need to have some boons to his profile if we wanted to try to shoot him up into the sphere of some of the other names we've mentioned.
All right, the last guy that's a bigger name that's been kind of trendy in the last month or so because of the blazing speed that he had was Jalen Wright. Now, Jalen Wright, with his athletic profile, you would expect to see home run hitter type breakaway rush scores. Where does he come in?
No, you do not see them. In fact, gets a breakaway rush score of 29 in this class that puts him in the bottom quarter. The worst part for him, though, right, is that as a receiver, terrible numbers. As a rusher, not encouraging numbers either. One of the things that you'd see is in the article, I kind of set things up so they're like a heat map, and you can quickly look at the chart and see where a player did well and where they did not do well. The only spot where he kind of was lukewarm was on normalized attempts for 40 plus. That's his only spot. And overall, though in some formulations that 40 plus mark has been useful, you still want to see more at the lower ends, as those probably tend to be more sticky. So Jalen Wright, I know there was some excitement from this exercise. You can't do anything to really get more excited about his profile. And I'm quickly pulling him up here in the box score scout, Curtis, because I do want to just drill into a couple of things here. As a sophomore, gets 10 rushing touchdowns and RB Dominator of 0.21. 2023 as a junior, does get an RB Dominator up to 30, but just 4 rushing touchdowns. Failed to record any touchdowns as a receiver. Finishes his career with just 6 touchdowns per season. You know, I know people have been excited about the athleticism, but I think you start to stack him up against other names in this class, and I'm just not as excited.
All right, so we've hit some of the biggest names. Now I want to hit a couple sleepers here, and then, you know, there's a lot of guys that we're not going to get to in this episode. So again, we've referenced the article. You got to go to rotoviz.com, look at Dave's running back breakaway scores article here. I've also tweeted it out. You can find it easily on my profile. I think I've tweeted it a couple times here. The top guy, Dave, the top guy this year has a BAS of 74, which would tie him with Saquon Barkley in your database, okay? Yeah. But he's from tiny Monmouth. Is it even university or is it college? It's Monmouth, okay?
I honestly just have no idea. Like, I don't even know where it is. We're looking it up right now. All right, it's in... Yeah.
Tell us.
It's in New Jersey.
Okay.
Monmouth University. It's in West Long Branch, New Jersey. It's a private nonprofit 4-year university.
West Long Branch, New Jersey. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So this guy, if you bought the RotoViz fantasy football rookie draft guide in volume 1, he was one of Blair's sleepers that we covered in the end of that first volume. So it's a name you're going to have seen before, and you're going to be familiar with his prospect rating being one of the higher ones from the running back class this year. So you're already a step ahead, and you might have an idea who this guy is based on Sean's write-up and some of my sims from the rookie draft guide. But Dave, tell us who has this score 74 and how he got there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so this is Jaden Sheridan of Monmouth University, as we just discovered. Now, a couple of things that help him are he did average 18.8 attempts per game, did not get involved that much as a receiver. So his incredible breakaway rush score here, Curtis, really all comes from him acting as a rusher. As you mentioned, his performance here, for example, normalized 15 plus attempts, he's at 110. That gets him in a class that just includes like Jonathan Taylor, Duke Johnson, Tevin Coleman, and Melvin Gordon. Some of the best numbers that we've seen in that regard. And then also his normalized of 20 and 30, very high. You can look at normalized for 40 or more. And we only have Melvin Gordon. And Melvin Gordon, there's an asterisk with here because I only had like one season of data for when play-by-play data was available to parse these out. So just him and Tevin Coleman, the only guys coming in over Jaden Sheridan. And again, what's so impressive is his receiving numbers are like barely even there. So as a rusher, this guy was just really impressive. Now, one thing that people could say is, all right, well, he played at Monmouth. All right. But when we start looking through these listings, we don't see, like you said earlier, players at similar schools always popping up towards the top of these lists. Now, are you going to go out and are you going to try to prioritize him because of this? No. But when you're looking at players later on and you're just trying to take a dart, you know, it's one of those names to keep in mind because these are pretty impressive results. It's pretty exciting. Does this guarantee anything? Dwayne McBride crushed last year. I went out and got him everywhere. He didn't come to fruition. But, you know, you take enough of these chances. You know, Javian Hawkins was another disappointment, too, who I think performed pretty well in this regard. But you keep taking enough of these chances. Eventually, you know, you're going to land on one of these sleepers panning out.
Yeah, for sure. So you get in round four, round five of your rookie draft. I mean, you could do worse than throwing Jaden Sheridan's name out there. If he sticks on a roster, I mean, I bet we'll hear from him, at least in the preseason.
Yep.
Why I read through all 30 of those names at the beginning of the episode is save Darwin Thompson and Paul Perkins. We heard from all 28 of the other guys. We heard from at some point from a fantasy perspective in their career. And even, you know, I would kind of like liken this to Jaleel McLaughlin from Youngstown State last year. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a backfield factor for the Broncos, and he's out of tiny Youngstown State, and it can be hard to project some of this production forward, but he had a score of 69. Sheridan comes in 5 points higher than him even. So I don't want people to just brush it aside. Like, it's material to see this score. You're going to be smart. You're not going to say, cause he has the highest score here, you're going to, you know, overdraft him by three rounds. You don't need to. I mean, you can adjust for the draft capital piece.
Yep.
All right. There is one other player, in this year's class that would also break into the top 30. I guess another way of saying this is they will be in the top 30 next year when you write this article, for the previous decade. And that's Isaiah Davis, also out of, tiny South Dakota State. He actually has a little bit more going for him, at least in the receiving category, not quite as much going in the long breakaway rushes. So a little bit more of a balanced profile, maybe like a light version of, a competition adjusted version of what Jonathan Brooks was doing. But take us through Isaiah Davis here a little bit with an impressive score of 61.
Yeah. So like you said, he was pretty balanced. So if you look at his rushing numbers, and you compare these to some of the players that we see above. And then you also, or when I say above, in that top 30 group of players we looked at, and then you look at his receiving work, that gets him into an area where you might kind of comp him to somebody like Jay Ajayi, Javorius Allen, or Jaleel McLaughlin, who you'd mentioned. So if we drill a little bit more into the specifics, he had 18.7 attempts per game, which surely helps. This drove his normal 10 plus into a significantly high range. One of the, what would be one of the higher in the group of 30. And then also, if you just look at 10 plus, he's going to land maybe in the middle of that top 30 pack as well. So solid rushing. Then as a receiver, the work that he did, pretty significant, would probably get him towards the top 25th percentile if you looked at that as well. Now, the interesting thing about him, Curtis, is that he did not do a lot at the very explosive marks. He was just very consistent with the opportunity that he had getting 15, 20 type of yards. So he was very reliable in that regard. So another guy that you can have in, you know, in your back pocket as you're starting to think about players to use your later round picks on.
All right. So we talked about some of the big name guys, how they fared in the breakaway score. We talked about a couple sleepers here at the end of the episode, and Jaden Sheridan and Isaiah Davis. There are a couple other sleepers that you're really going to want to check out this article.
There's one I'm holding myself back from talking about I'm not going to do it.
Talk about him another time. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about him another time. But Dave, he has 4.5 receptions a game. It's out of every player that is either listed in the 2024 class or your top 30. It's the most receptions per game of any of these profiles. And he has one of the best receiving breakaway profiles of anybody that I'm seeing in either of these lists. And I mean, I quite like him. He also had a game where he had over 200 receiving yards as a running back. So you're going to want to check this out. And I think the value is very clear. Just reading down that top 30 from the last decade, the value is clear. You're at least going to want to know, hey, who are those guys that had, you know, score above 50, score above 57? And, you know, you're going to take some swings there. So check it out on rotoviz.com. Dave will continue to write some of this deep research analysis stuff for us. It's so applicable to Dynasty, but also can help us really identify some of those best ball dart throws. So you're going to hear these names, not just, you know, when we're talking like a prospect analysis, you're going to end up hearing these names later on when we're talking draft strategy and structural based drafting throughout the offseason. So Dave, thank you for your expertise, sharing a little bit about your methodology here. We're going to be back next week with a breakdown of an early rookie draft. I'm crazy enough, I'm doing rookie drafts before the NFL draft, Dave. And I'm making moves and I'm trading up and down the board. We're going to talk about it early next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.